Hello, is that a lot better?
Hello, mate. Yeah, that sounded a lot better. I think the problem was that my volume was a little bit too high, so all you could hear in the background when I was talking was sort of like, it was a bit horrible.
Was it like one of those old Matting 20s disc players?
Not quite, but yeah, the quality was pretty bad though, mate. Welcome back to another episode of the Retro Asylum podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and joining me is the one, the only...
Glenn83100!
Happy New Year to you, buddy. I know it's a bit late, but I thought I'd say it anyway.
Happy New Year to you, Andy, and I heard you got a surprise coming this year.
Yes, the surprise is I have won the lottery. Nah, my surprise is basically I'm going to be a dad again.
Oh, good to hear that, Andy.
Yeah, I literally found out, Glenn, before New Year's Eve, actually. Basically, it was about 5 years since I've had New Year's off, you know, so I really wanted to get completely drunk. And then that morning, my wife goes, I think I might be pregnant. So New Year's Eve, she did a test, and it turns out she was pregnant. But she did about five different tests and then even ended up going to the doctors for her to believe that she was completely pregnant. But she is. She's 8 weeks pregnant.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, Andy.
Yeah, so I don't know how I'm going to have time for retro gaming podcasts or sites, but I'll find a minute here and there to sort of like show my face and stuff. So how was your Christmas and New Year then, mate?
Oh, I had a really good Christmas. On Christmas Day, I went over to my cousin's house. He has this massive house in Halifax. It's like in the middle of the countryside, on the outskirts of Halifax.
Right, okay.
A beautiful house. You know, we were there with all the family. There must be like 20 of us there. So I had a really nice Christmas. And on Boxing Day, my girlfriend's mum and dad came round to our house. So, it's the first time in 10 years that my mum and dad's talk to their mum and dad.
And how did they get on then, the parents?
Oh, they got on fine.
Did they? Really? Oh, fantastic.
It's a funny story that, because they actually met 10 years prior to that, but I wasn't going out with her at the time.
Maybe it was destiny, mate. It was destiny. So did you get any nice presents though, Glenn, for over Christmas?
Mainly clothes, because I asked for clothes. Because
right, okay.
The thing about me is I'm not a great lover of clothes shopping. I like going around clothes shopping with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Don't mind doing that, but looking at men's clothes, I don't know, I'm not much a person that goes around looking at clothes. So my brother knows all about clothes, so he goes and bought some clothes. And yeah, I got really nice new leather coats and some nice new jeans from my girlfriend and some nice new tops. So
that's good, mate.
I got for Christmas.
I'm trying to think what else is happening with me. Okay, apart from being a dad again, it was my birthday a few weeks ago, actually. I turned 35 years old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, mate. My wife took me out to a really nice restaurant, had some nice yummy food. But she did get me a really nice book. She got me the Oliver Frey Book of Arts. You remember Oliver Frey from the Replay Expo when he was talking about Crash Magazine and Zap? And he did all the artwork. So some of the artwork is phenomenal, and it goes into the history about Oliver Frey. So, yeah, that's pretty much it, Glenn. I haven't really been up to a lot, apart from the fact that I'm moving house early February. I'm moving to my new house.
Oh, so is it, you said it's not been built yet, or is it actually been built?
Yeah, it should be finished being built by the end of this month, so hopefully we can move in, no problems, around the 5th and the 6th. So really looking forward to it. You know, it's a decent-sized house. Three bedrooms, nice garden, so on.
The London Underground must pay you really well to be able to buy a house in this day and age.
Well, technically, you know, where I'll be living is outside of London, so...
All right.
I'm going to have to commute in the Overground train to London, and I'll be doing my driving test this year, so hopefully in a couple of months I'll be driving.
Oh, couple of months? God, you must be good. It took me about 9 months to pass from January.
Glenn, you know, technically I've played Outrun, I've played Mario Kart, you know, I've played Daytona,
so it
shouldn't be that difficult.
It is different.
I can drive bumpy cars.
It is different. You've got to have to learn the rules of the road. I think Sweeney can tell you that.
Right, so anyway, today is episode 8. We've got a slightly different show. We won't be giving you any sort of like retro gaming news or anything like that. Or what we'll be doing is talking about rose-tinted glasses, you know, gaming nostalgia. We're going to tell you a little bit about us, why we play games, and things like that, basically. Oh my God, I sounded like Tony by saying things like that.
Oh, things like that.
Things like that. Right, anyway, so what was the first question that I had lined up for us then, Glenn?
The list of computers and consoles we had.
So shall I go first, or do you want to go first, buddy? I'm not too fussed.
I'll let Andy go first.
Fantastic. So literally, I'm 35 years old, and the reason why I'm saying that is so that way our listeners can get, you know, the grips to find out how old I roughly was when these machines came out, you know. So the first memory of gaming I have got takes me back to the arcades. I remember, because my brother's a lot older than me, he's about, what, 15, 16 years older than me. He took me, he was babysitting me once, and he took me to the arcades. And I think that the arcades I remember seeing and actually playing were Space Invaders and Mario Brothers, the two-player game.
And what year would that would have been, Andy?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. But those are some of the first arcade machines I remember. After that, I think my next memory of gaming was when my brother had a ZX80. And I used to sort of just watch him type out some programs. It was very basic, I think. I think it only had 1K of memory. And then he got himself a ZX81, which was pretty much exactly the same as the ZX80. And then he got himself a 16K extension, which gave it a little bit more power. And I remember sitting there with my brother, and he used to have like books of programming, and he used to get me to type it out. And I used to really have fun doing that. But it was difficult typing, Glenn, for the fact that it was just a flat keyboard, so sometimes it was difficult to press.
Is it like
things.
Rubbery? Was the keys like rubbery on it?
No, it's completely flat, you know, it's just a flat surface. I think it must have had tiny little pressure pads underneath the where the letters were, because they weren't even keys, they were just like, it was just literally flat. So I used to program games for my brother, you know, when I was little, and it used to be amazing. And I think after that, Glenn, my next memory of gaming possibly was the Atari 2600.
Oh, that's a classical, that one. I played Atari 2600, but it wasn't called the 2600 at the beginning. I think it was called the Video Game System.
Was it?
Yeah, before the, I think it's 5200 that came out later on.
Well, actually, I'm not too sure which one is the one I had, Glenn. I always thought it was 2600 I had. I'm thinking maybe it was the one afterwards, because the one I had wasn't the wooden one that had the wooden thing or the little metal button things that you could flick up and down. This one was completely black. It was kind of the size of a laptop. It had like a red strip and a silver bit on top of it.
Yeah.
So maybe it was the more modern one.
Did you, was the joystick, was it movable, really movable?
No, the joystick was the one that literally you held in one hand, and it had the buttons on the bottom left and the bottom right, and it was one joystick.
I think it's the 5200 you had.
Right, so was that the one that could play all the older games as well?
No, that's the mistake that Atari did. When they brought out the 5200.
Yeah.
They did the mistake of not having backward compatibility
right
to the previous system. Now, ColecoVision released their system round about that time, 1983, mm-hmm. and they had backwards compatibility with the Atari 2600.
Oh, wow. I had no idea about that. But yeah, so I used to have that Atari. Trying to think what other machines I had from then. Oh, yeah. After that, I had some sort of Pong machine. I don't know the name of it, Glenn, but it was a Pong machine, basically. It had Pong. You could play tennis on it or hockey. It was just the same game, but different variations of it. I think my sister-in-law gave me that one. What else did we have back in the day? Oh, yeah. My first proper computer for myself was a ZX Spectrum. Even though I've told you the story, I originally wanted a Commodore 64, but I got my Speccy, and I grew to love it. A few years later, I got given my my brother's old Commodore 64. And then I got given an Amstrad as well. And then I think after that, I had the Sega Master System. A few years later, I got the NES, the Game Boy, Game Gear. What else? I've had pretty much everything, Glenn.
Did you have the Super Nintendo and Mega Drive?
Yeah. I mean, the Super Nintendo and Mega Drive, those are machines that I actually purchased myself. We'll delve into purchasing machines ourselves a little bit later. And then I had the PlayStation, the N64, and so on. So I'll tell you what, tell us a little bit about all the machines you owned. First of all, how old are you, Glenn?
Well, you know, everybody knows me. I'm Glenn 83100. I'm 28 years old.
Right, so...
So when the Commodore 64 came out, I wasn't even born.
Right.
Because that came out around about 1982 and the ZX Spectrum.
So you must have got that a few years towards the end of the C64 lifespan then, perhaps.
I was 3 years old, so it would have been around about 1986, 1987 when I first got it.
Right, okay.
So it's really, I think it was in its kind of like prime time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's when I got the Commodore. Well, I explained about the Commodore 64. I got it at Christmas. I was a bit scared of it at first. Then I grown to like it. And to this very day, it's one of my best systems, my favourite systems I ever had.
Yeah, I think that's another little subject we'll talk about, how the first machine is the one that you always hold a fond memory to. What were the other machines that you had, Glenn?
Well, the other machines I had, I also had a Nintendo Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I got that, it came with Tetris.
Oh, yeah.
But also had, for the Game Boy, a wrestling game, Nigel Mansell and Mario Land. I loved Mario Land. That was brilliant for it. And then after that, I had a Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you see, I think that was kind of the one I purchased, because me and my brother put some money together to buy a Super Nintendo. I originally wanted a Mega Drive, because I wanted Sonic.
Right.
But my brother wasn't going to have it. He goes, no, we're having a Nintendo, we're not having nothing. And he needed me to put my money in. He needed him to put his money in. So we got a Super Nintendo. And to this very day, I don't regret it, because in some ways I did like the Super Nintendo.
Mm.
But round about that time, I was about 9 years old when I got the Super Nintendo. So I was still quite young then. So when you were like 9 years old, it would have been the Commodore 64 days, isn't it?
So what about the other machines that you owned then? You had an Amiga as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I borrowed a Commodore Amiga from a friend. Like, that came with loads of games. And to this very day, I absolutely adored the Amiga. It was a fantastic machine.
Would
have had that when I was, you know, I could have had that when I was 3-4 years old, because it only just came out around those days.
Yeah.
And it was a system way ahead of its time, the Commodore Amiga. You know, when you look at the Commodore Amiga to all the other systems, it just blew a lot of them out the water. After that, I went into a PC stage. I had a few PCs. I had a PC with a 3D effects chip. I had a Pentium 1. I had an AMD. And I became a PC gamer for a few years over the N64 and the PlayStation days.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is because my mum see a computer as educational.
Yeah, that's
right. Well, what I did, I saved a few pennies, so I upgraded the memory, upgraded the RAM, and a lot of games that came out on the PlayStation and a lot of games that came out on the N64 also released on the PC, so I just got the PC version. And I think even in those days, the PC was actually far more superior to the PlayStation and even the N64.
Oh, no, definitely, yeah.
But I don't think it's not that much better now.
Mm.
And then after that, when I got a job and started working at Tesco's, I think, yeah, I've got all this money now. What am I going to do? And I think, right, I'm going to buy myself a Game Boy Advance. So I've got this Game Boy Advance with all these old games for it, like what I had for the Super Nintendo. Because before then, I didn't really have an emulator. So it's nice to play some of the old games again on the Game Boy Advance. And then on my 18th birthday, I got a Sony PlayStation 2. And I first played Grand Theft Auto 3 on my 18th birthday.
Wow.
Just how's it legal to play 18 games?
So didn't you have an N64 at all, Glenn?
I didn't have a Nintendo 64.
Really? I thought you had one.
I borrowed one.
What's your memory of arcades then? Did you play any of the arcades? Did you actually visit an arcade? Or were arcades not around the area where you were growing up?
I mainly went to arcades when I went to the beach.
Yeah.
Because the round at the seafront, round at Bridlington and Scarborough, and at Primrose Valley, a campsite that's just outside of Filey. If you don't know what those areas are, it's the east coast of North Yorkshire and east ridings of Yorkshire.
Okay.
So if you want to know the area, it was around there. And yeah, there was at Primrose Valley, it's this big campsite, and they had a massive arcade. They had Ridge Racer, they had Sega Rally, they had Who Shot Johnny Rock, and Virtual Fighter. They had loads and loads of arcade game machines. And I think I really first experienced arcades when I was around about 8 years old, properly experienced it. So by the time I was 8 years old, I think 3D started to creep in. There were still 2D games around that came out, but 3D really started to come in when I was getting near that age.
It's interesting you say that, though, Glenn, because you're talking about when you started getting into our game, 3D games were coming in. You're a good few years younger than me. Now, my first memory of arcade games, apart from the one I mentioned, was when I was about 11 or 12. I used to go to the arcades with my friends, and we used to play games like Double Dragon or Shinobi and Golden X. And there used to be, sometimes the fairground used to come round to the local parks, and that's when we used to get to play a lot of the more modern games. But I think we used to go on school trips to Margate. And they used to have a massive, arcade selection down there by the seaside front. And that's where I used to play games like Street Fighter 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So there was still a majority 2D as opposed to 3D. But then again, that's what I was wondering, Glenn. For someone that's a good few years younger than me, it amazes me that you're still hooked on these retro games, you know?
Well, I think the reason is because I have experienced it with the Commodore 64, experienced it with the Super Nintendo.
So you've got appreciation.
So I've got appreciation for 2D games. Also, I know quite a bit about the technology specs and specifications of the system. And it's really impressive what programmers can really do with these systems. Like, if I have to program anything like that, I won't be able to do anything. The systems be so limited, but the programmers are that good. They could get the most out of the systems.
Well, that's another thing I want to talk about, Glenn. When I think about a game like Golden Axe or a game like generally an arcade game, it's amazing how they managed to get that and put it on an 8-bit computer like a Spectrum, Amstrad or a C64. Obviously, they had to cut back graphically, cut back on sounds. But a lot of the time, the playability was completely there.
Yeah, well, it really is a credit to the programmers at the time. It must have took sheer hard work to do it. Well, look at the Oliver twins. Spent hours on end. You chatted to the Oliver twins, so they explained all the programming, all the things they had to do. So it sounded like a lot of hard work. But have you ever played Virtual Racing? That's one of the first 3D games I really experienced, and that was really good.
I was blown away by that game in the arcades, Glenn, but I was even more blown away when I actually played it on the Sega Mega Drive, because it had like a built-in chip as well, like the FX chip, which made the game run 3D polygons on it, and it was amazing. It looked really good from memory. I haven't played it in years though.
Hello everybody, this is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Now we've talked about the list of computers and consoles that we've played, and a little bit of history of our gaming. Now the next thing I want to find out, Glenn, is what are the first few games that you played? Not necessarily the first games that you fell in love with, but what were the first few games that you actually played? So give me three examples.
I will say Rainbow Island, played Little Puff, that was one of my first games, and Bubble Bobble. So that was the first few games I played on it.
All on the C64?
Yeah, all on the Commodore 64.
Right, so how did you feel when you had seen these games for the first time?
Well, it was what I loved about it. It was something new. As somebody who's 3 or 4 years old, it was something that I never experienced before. Mm-hmm. And to actually interact with it on the screen, it was pretty amazing. That's my first impressions of the game. So but I wasn't too good with it at first. But practice, you become good.
So for you, Glenn, because you're a little bit younger, were these like toys that you could actually move around with. Yeah. Instead of playing with your toys physically, you could actually control these characters on the screen.
Yeah, you're right there. It's like you could interact with the screen. Like when you were a kid, you like to interact with things. Like you like to interact with little toys and stuff. When I got the Commodore 64, I never really had a lot of toys except for Lego.
Yeah.
But I always got like a Commodore 64 game and stuff. Anyway, I think that was beneficial to my mum and dad because Commodore 64 games weren't priced badly. They were about £3, £4 sometimes.
Well, yeah, I think the budget games at one point they were £1.99. Eventually, they became £2.99, and full price game ranged anywhere from £8.99 to like about £12.99, which is really cheap compared to games of nowadays. But let me quickly mention a few of my favourite games I first played. Now, I mentioned before, the first game I visually remember seeing was Super Mario. No, it wasn't even Super Mario. It was Mario Brothers. Have you seen it, Glenn? Literally, it's just two players. You've got three different little levels. And what you've got to do, and you've got like a big yellow block in the middle, and you've got to run around, hit underneath the platforms, hit the turtles, which turns them upside down, and you jump over and kick them off. Yeah, it's really basic.
That was a really good game.
It's still very addictive. I mean, I played it at Replay Expo, actually, on the Atari 2600, and I really enjoyed it.
On Mario Bros. 3, on Mario All-Stars, there's that game on Mario Bros. 3. Have you played that?
Yeah, you can also find that as well. And pretty much every Game Boy Advance version of the Mario games, you find that as a little hidden extra thing. Now, the other game that I first remember was this game called Rocket Man. Now, I did that on one of the videos for the site, and Rocket Man is like an earlier, more primitive version of Chucky Egg. Now, literally, you play this little character, it looks really basic, and you've got to collect, I think, diamonds and fuel while this big giant bubble is chasing after you, and you've got to try and avoid him, and you've got to sort of like get across to the other side, and there's water on one side, so you've got to use your rocket pack, have enough fuel, collect the diamonds, collect more rocket fuel, and it was like that. It was very similar to Chucky Egg, and those were the first games that I remember playing, Glenn.
And what I find with the first games on the Commodore 64 on the Sinclair Spectrum, they were very simple games. Yeah. As time went along from 83, 84, 85 and 86, it started to become more and more into the game. You know, they started putting more stuff in and polishing it more.
Well, I think that was all down to memory restriction, though, don't you reckon, Glenn? I don't think you could do a lot of games, because a lot of games back then, they had a certain amount of screens, and then they would loop back, you know, a little bit more difficult. And I think a lot of the games as well were made more difficult to stop you from progressing that too fast and finishing the game too easily, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because, Chucky
is tough. I think Manic Miner's really tough as well.
And Jet Set Willy, that's tough. Anything kills you.
Now, talking about finishing games, what was the first couple of games that you finished, Glenn?
The first game I ever finished was Little Puff. And that's kind of like a Dizzy game, but you're a dragon instead.
That was made by Codemasters. Well, it was published by Codemasters, wasn't it?
It was published by Codemasters. I don't think the Oliver Twins programmed it.
No.
But it's similar to Dizzy. You have to go around, collect objects, and sort out little puzzles. And at the end, the dragon gets this, I think, letter, and they have to pass a postman. Mm-hmm. And then Little Puff, walks home.
Christ. So how long did it take you to finish this game, Glenn? Because this is before there were save slots. You couldn't sort of like save the game there. And this is something that us modern gamers are spoilt from now. Back then, you really had to stick at it. You know, Little Puff didn't have password, did it?
Didn't have passwords. You only had one life.
Oh,
like
God.
Treasure Island Dizzy. So you only had one life and no save modes. But we did have one little advantage. The Codemasters helpline. And my mum paid for the call. She went, right, we ring up Codemasters and see what we have to do. She rang up and put the radio and recorded it next to the phone. And basically, we went through the whole game by the phone.
Wow. So is that what you had to do so you could finish it?
Yeah.
See, like me, I was so used to playing the Dizzy games, Glenn, that I got pretty good at solving these puzzles. And I first got Little Puff. It was published, like I said, published by Codemasters, but I think it was done by Cartoon Time.
I think it is, yes.
And I literally played that game, and it was tough because you only had one life, like you said, and you kept on dying. But eventually, I figured out, and I could finish it. And I think it is possible to finish that game in under 10 minutes now.
Yeah, if you collect all the items correctly, because some of the items in that game is useless. I don't think use the diamond for anything, because yeah. The diamond comes up. So some of the items you do not pick up.
They're just trick items, aren't they?
Yeah, a gun. There's a gun you don't pick up.
Did you know Little Puff actually had a sequel?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was basically really panned by the critics because apparently it was really poor. It was a platformer, kind of. It tried to be like New Zealand Story or Mario. It played similar to, say, CJ, but it was really poor.
Yeah, well, I always find that a lot of games, when they make sequels, sometimes they're not as good. Look at Renegade. Renegade 3.
Well, now, Renegade was the original arcade game, and then you had Target Renegade, which was the unofficial sequel, which I think was better than that. But, okay, what was another game that you finished then?
Another game I finished is Outrun.
What? On the C64?
On the Commodore 64. It was quite easy on the Commodore 64.
Oh, okay. I never tried to finish on the C64. On the arcades, Glenn, if you could finish that, this is honestly going back to when I was a kid at school, if you could finish Outrun in the arcades, you were either a hero or a liar because that game was tough. So
it depends what route you take, isn't it? Does it mean you have to do all the routes?
No, I think you do one route, basically. But, all right, tell us about your C64 experience, because you said it is easier than the arcade.
It is easy because on the Commodore 64, you have to load up each route on tape. So when you load up one level on the Commodore 64, basically it's just one road that goes from one end to the other. And the game wasn't that difficult. I completed it very easily. But to this day, to especially say it was a US Gold game, the Commodore 64 version was pretty good. I actually liked it.
I've played it since. I haven't played it enough to try and finish it, but it does. It's a lot better than the ZX Spectrum version.
It's a bit
it
slow,
really is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think the music is really good as well. And it's pretty colourful. But, you know, overall, I think it was a great conversion. So how long did it take you to finish this game? Was it a process throughout a few days or weeks or months of continuously playing?
I think it's me and my brother continuing playing this game, because me and my brother loved it, especially how you could choose the music at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Like Splash Wave and a few other music. It was brilliant. It was a brilliant game on the Commodore 64.
Let me try and think of two games that I finished, because, I mean, games were a lot tougher then, so a lot of the games I didn't actually finish, so I would just mess around. All right, I think the first game from memory that I actually did complete was on the ZX, actually, it was on the Atari 26, on the Atari machine I owned. I had Ghostbusters. I know that the original version first came out on the C64, but I first played it, I think, on the Amstrad and then on the Atari. And I finished it on the Atari, and I was really impressed with that game. It was nice and easy. It's not too difficult. And I think I finished it later on the ZX Spectrum, then on the Commodore. I don't think I've ever finished the Amstrad, but literally, Glenn, it's not a difficult game. And you just go around catching ghosts, collect enough ghosts, you get more money, and then afterwards Zool appears, you've got to go to the building, and you've got to go underneath the marshmallow's legs, enter the building, and then you've completed it. You could literally finish that game in about 20 minutes, Glenn.
Wow. Just so you can't do that these days, can you? There's usually about 10 hours of gameplay at least on these modern games, but they're a lot easier because, like the Oliver Twins say, games back then had a limited amount of lives.
Yeah,
such
that's
as today,
right.
You had unlimited amount of lives. I don't know, is there a game you could mention that's new or recently come out that actually has lives? Because I can't really think of any.
No, there isn't, because no matter what game you play, you die, you continue, you keep on carrying on. So there is none of that. If you mess up, it's game over, because literally you'd have to put hours and hours for certain games. I mean, okay, now the game I'm going to mention next was, was Bruce Lee on the ZX Spectrum. Now, again, Glenn, it's not a hard game, but that was because I played it to death, basically, and I knew where all the lanterns were, I knew certain places to get extra lives, I knew how to jump certain levels. Now, I could get really far, and there was one bit, Glenn, which really annoyed me. There was this bit where you're running along and they've got these little electric things running across the floor and the whole screen is filled with these. So literally, you're jumping on one platform, then you fall down to the other platform and there are these electrical things on the floor. And it's all about timing. And that's where that I used to mess up and used to lose all my lives. But with practice...
You'll learn the sequences.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's part of the game. They come in sequences and you think, right, after that sequence, this happens. So I'll make sure I'm here when that happens.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, it was just something made me think when I was talking to Philip, Oliver, that I basically like having lives in the game because when you do finish a game, I think you do get that self of accomplishment and achievement, you know? Because you've invested all that time. You come so close and you failed many times, which has angered you. But then that one time you finish it and you're thinking, yes, I've completed that game. So, yeah, those are two games I actually finished then. So how much time did you put into a game and why did you put so much time into particular games? Any particular reason?
Because when you're young and free and single and you don't have to go to work and you have only school holidays, you've got plenty of spare time to play some games. And if you've got nothing else to do, you think, yeah, I'll play some Quick Snacks. Yeah, I'll play some Dizzy. And, like, even today, sometimes when I come home thinking, yeah, I have a bit of spare time. I play some Commodore 64 games or, play some Xbox games. So, if you feel like you want to play some games on your spare time.
Yeah. So, basically, what you're saying is, Glenn, then, you had a lot more time to do gaming when you were younger because you had a lot more free time available.
Yes.
What I found, Glenn, because when I was younger, I don't know if it's the same with you, for my first set of computers, like the Sega Master System, ZX Spectrum, it wasn't very often I got games. So every so often, my mum and dad would buy me a game, and I'd have to play that game to death until I waited until the following month till I got a new game. So sometimes, I remember on the Master System, I got, what game was it? Alien Syndrome. Oh. And I wasn't a big fan of that game, but it was the only game new game that I had that month. So I would sit there and play this game. And like you said, I had school, and all I would do after school was play games. So I could sit down there and put all my spare time into these games and actually complete these games for that particular reason.
And you have to take into account that the cartridge-based systems, the games were a lot more expensive, so that your mum and dad can't afford to buy a game every minute.
That's right, yeah. Yes. I think it is a case of, because money was limited then and games were bought for you. It's like nowadays, Glenn, I've got a bit of cash because I work. I can buy myself a game. I can play it for a little bit, but then I'll get myself another game and I'll play that for 5 minutes. That's what I find about modern gaming, that I don't tend to finish one game or play one game non-stop. I tend to sort of play a game here, a little bit there, then I'll play another game a little bit there, then I'll go back to it. Whereas originally, I used to stick to one game till I completed it, and then I'd get another game.
Now, I like to add something in here, and it's about playing games when you're younger. Do you think games have got a lot more violent now than they were then?
It's mixed bag, really. It's when you think about it. Games like Commando. What do you do in Commando? You're basically a soldier, and you're literally going around shooting everyone. You're killing people. I'm trying to think. Are games like Rampage? Rampage, you're a big monster.
And smashing buildings.
Yeah, you're smashing buildings. You're eating humans. So I think maybe because it was more primitive back then, maybe it wasn't as realistic. Whereas now, if you play a game like GTA and you're running people over,
it does look a lot more realistic.
Yeah, I think the whole outrage of it started happening when the whole Mega Drive came out and the Super Nintendo, the whole Mortal Kombat thing, because they used digitized graphics for, at the time, they looked very flashy and very realistic. That caused more of an uproar. I mean, what's your point of view on the whole thing then, Glenn?
I think I do agree with you, Andy. I think back, when I was young, the computer and the game systems weren't capable of producing the graphics like today's game systems, of being very gory, if you know what I mean. The systems today are that powerful that they can produce games that are so realistic that it can be dangerous to some kids. They really believe they can do that in real life, but they can't. But back then, it was primitive.
Yeah, but then again, though, Glenn, I think, no offence to anyone with any mental problems, but I think there's got to be that something not quite right in a person for them to do something, copy a game and do it. Because I grew up playing games, I grew up watching horror films, but I would not ever go out and hurt someone because I played this, you know, a game.
It has happened.
It has happened to other people, but, you know, I think there's something must be not quite right for them to do that. I think a lot of people tend to blame games or movies or music, but again, I think it's a small minority of people that have got issues that tend to act upon these things.
Funny enough, one of the games that caused an outrage, and it actually got, I think, in some countries, some governments has that put an age limits on games, was a game called Night Trap on the, I think it was Mega CD.
Mm.
And basically, I think I must watch this. I must see what this game's like. And it's really, really cheesy. Have you ever seen that game?
I haven't actually. I think I've seen a few little things from on YouTube, but it doesn't look that. It does look cheesy because it's all actors doing the thing.
I think it was supposed to come out on a system, but it never got released. A CD-based system for an arcade or somewhere. So it was sitting on the shelf for a few years. And when the CD-based system started coming, I got, right, we'll put that Night Trap on. And basically, I think on Night Trap, you're a control of this house and you've got to set up traps that trap vampires. And I looked at it and thinking, I could see why in those days people think it was violent, but when you look at it today, you could just do nothing but laugh at it.
Well, it's just like, you know, again, you look at Mortal Kombat, it looks primitive. You look at a game like Resident Evil and it's certain bits are scary, but you look at the graphics now, they've aged really badly. But at the time, you know, the CD quality sound, the dogs jumping out of the windows was groundbreaking.
Oh, I tell you, that game made me jump. If there was only one game that made me jump when I was a kid, it was Resident Evil 1 and 2. There was a bit on Resident Evil 2. And I was in a police station.
Yeah.
And I walked through into a back room where there was this great big glass window. And there was an object to pick up. As soon as I walked to that object, this great big bloody thing, whatever, came through the window. I went, that made me jump.
Well, I actually got the same sort of feeling. Where was it? Last week, I was playing Resident Evil 4. I love that game. And I was trying to sort of get enough, you know, money in the game. Well, so you've got to play it through it once, and then the second time you play it through, that way you'll have enough cash, you can unlock the infinite rocket launcher. But anyway, on the first playthrough, there's this bit where this person with a bag over the head comes through with a chainsaw, and you hear the chainsaw, and you can hear it going... And you know, if that person hits you with a chainsaw, you're dead. One hit will kill. So when you see that person running towards you, and you're thinking, crap, I haven't got enough ammo. You actually do get scared. It's amazing how games manage to capture that.
And on the first Resident Evil games, the zombies weren't that bright. But on Resident Evil 4, I think, right, I go into this house, and they never follow me in. And then all of a sudden, these zombies start crawling ring through the windows, crawling through the roof, crawling through the door. But God, they outsmarted me. And they're even putting up ladders against the house to get through the windows.
It is amazing, you know, how much games have progressed since that we started playing them.
So hello, everybody. My name is Matt. Go by the name of Denaris on the forum. That's the Retro Asylum forum, of course. And big thank you to Andy and the team for letting me do this little snippet of a section on their podcast. So, introduction to myself. I've got a few questions that Andy wants me to answer. Give you a brief overview of me and what I'm about. So, I've given you a name, of course. My route into gaming started early on, very early on, with the Atari, I believe it was a 2600 that we got bought for Christmas one year. I mean, we're talking, I must have been three, four, no later than five.
I don't really remember it other than us seeing this wooden style console, and I seem to remember Pong or something along those lines. I know we didn't keep it. I think my parents took it back because it was just going to be way too expensive to buy games for. And when you're a family that doesn't have exactly a lot of money, it was just way too expensive. So that was taken back. The next I remember could have been a ZX81, but definitely the Spectrum. The Spectrum was my sort of early doors gaming machine. My brothers had it, first of all, 16K, then the 48K. And I kind of got into that, not really knowing much about it, what I could do on it. So to begin with, I'll be playing on my brothers, and then I got a 48K at some stage, must have been 85, 86, and I just remember my brother coming home most nights from a friend's house and having different games. Be a different game every night. I'd be in bed, ready for school in the morning, and he'd come home wondering what game he'd got copied that night. Did I say copied? I meant he'd bought from a shop, of course. And it would be exciting getting up in the morning before school, this was, and playing a game on the computer. There's something I just couldn't comprehend doing now. Not as I'll go to school now, but putting a computer on before I go to work, doesn't compute. It's not within me at all. But back then, it was all about getting up early, playing that game, and then getting really, really excited about coming home from school and playing it. Back in those days, time seemed to be never ending. You'd have loads of time on your hands, and you get home from school, and from school to tea time, it would seem like an eternity. But you'd be playing that game, and then after tea, be straight on it again, and trying to just play it until you go to bed. So there were some great games on the Spectrum. School Days, Back to School, Iridium. What other classic Spectrum games can I think of? I was a fan of Trapdoor and Bobby Bearin, I remember. Of course, there's RoboCop, which obviously featured the massively recognisable music that was used in an Ariston advert. Although it wasn't the Spectrum version, it was the Game Boy version, I believe, by Jonathan Dunn. Lotus Esprit Turbo Challenge by Jurel. That was that's brilliant. That still plays wicked today, running pedestrians over and hacking around corners, smashing into other cars. Absolutely brilliant gameplay. Some really great games. I've already mentioned Contact Sam Cruiser. I remember Dan Dare. I never really liked Dan Dare, but that's a game that popped into my mind as something I played. Glider Rider, of course. Glider Rider. Never got far on that. I've been playing that recently, and I still can't play it. I just don't know how you ever get into that bit in the middle. Never know. So anyway, the Spectrum went on for a couple of years, and then, I don't know where it come from, I must have got it for Christmas, was the Commodore 64, and that was the love for me that really took me from playing games to loving a machine. Now, I regret ever not learning how to program on it, and not doing music back in the day on the Commodore, because I loved the sound chip at the time, the Mighty Sid chip. The Commodore was the big love for me. 88, 89, 90, well, right up to 91. I remember in that period getting a Game Boy, selling my Commodore 64 to get a Game Boy. Had the Game Boy for a while, then sold that and bought a Commodore 64 again. But the Commodore 64, I couldn't even list you all the games now that I loved on that. But there was like Parallax and Iridium and Cybernoid and so many others. And there was... It's just a beautiful computer in every way. It's got so much charm about it, which I think the Spectrum lacks. I'm a big Spectrum fan, but I think it lacks the charm of the Commodore 64. So the Commodore 64 took me up to about 91, and that's when I got my first Amiga 500. That's where my life changed. I didn't have a life. It was just the Amiga from start to finish. And that's when I started getting into music making and programming. Never finished anything programming-wise, but... The Amiga was and still is to this day, and I still have a large collection of Amigas, the best computer ever, in my opinion. I missed out on a lot of the consoles because I was so into the Amiga. I went Amiga 500 up to Amiga 1200. I'm sure I had a CD32 in there at some stage as well, but the Amiga for me was more of a culture, was more of a just a community. I got very involved in the demo scene. That was brilliant. But, you know, not to ramble on about that, consoles went through, I've had consoles in that sort of later life more than the earlier life, so I got a SNES at some stage, N64, not long after it came out, Dreamcast, not long after it came out. I've never had a PlayStation 1 or 2 or 3. Then from Dreamcast, got the Xbox and the Xbox 360. So that's my gaming history. Don't want to go too much onto that because I bore the living daylights out of a lot of you. Why do I still play retro games? Retro games, like I've mentioned on the Retro Asylum forum, is it's just the simplicity of the games. Obviously, nostalgia plays a massive part in it. You want to go back to those times. You want to try and relive the feelings, the atmosphere of those times, the atmosphere of Christmas, the atmosphere of the summer holidays or Easter holidays. I remember spending a whole Easter holiday on Championship Manager 93, 94, and it just sucked it away. Playing that, and I was listening to jungle music, and it was just, that was my life. That was it. And just remember the sunny days outside, and it's that atmosphere you try and recapture. But unfortunately, the more you play those old games, I think the more that atmosphere goes away. But if you could bottle that atmosphere up and sell it, God, I'd buy one, get one free. I'd buy in bulk. I'd buy a shipping container load of it, because that's the feeling you want to get when you play those retro games. But I play them for nostalgia, for the ease of getting into them, and the quickness of the games. Is quickness a word? I'm not even sure quickness is a word, but you can just put one on, you could have a play on it for 5 minutes, get, you know, have a pretty decent game in that amount of time, and then turn it off and play another one. And because I've got a diabolical attention span, that works really well for me. And that's the main thing with really retro games, is the ease and the nostalgia. And I think with games on the iPhone, the iPad, Xbox Live Arcade, and the indie part of the arcade, there's all these little small games coming up again which really appeal to me. The, you know, take your iPhone to the toilet with you. It's the new magazine in the toilet for blokes, I'm sure. And that's why I like the old retro games, no doubt about it. And there's obviously so much choice as well. There's hundreds and thousands of games. One thing I want to talk about outside of the questions that Andy wanted me to sort of fill you guys in on is Christmas gaming. We've just had Christmas, of course, and Christmas for me is a particularly magical time of year, even at the grand old age of nearly mid-30s now, actually. And it's still one of those times of life which is just filled with magic, really. You know, I try and believe as much as I can in the whole Christmas thing. For me, as much as it's about giving and receiving, definitely is. But at Christmas, sort of, the retro gaming for me takes on a whole different meaning and view and feeling. I do get that atmosphere that I was just talking about, bottling up and trying to buy and sell. The run up to Christmas, from sort of when the nights start getting dark, the November, October, November times, crisp nights, and playing games then, and that reminds me of school and the Amiga days and the Commodore 64 days, and then moving up to Christmas, and there's some few games that really, really bring it back to me, and there's things like Iridium 2 on the Amiga. I'm banging on about the Amiga again, of course. Iridium 2 on the Amiga was very much a November, October-November game for me. But games I got for Christmas, Putty on the Amiga, Cannon Fodder on the Amiga, Cannon Fodder especially, I play that every year now at Christmas. Just because it has, I got it for Christmas one year, I think it was 93, I remember being on crutches at the time from a football accident where I broke my leg, and just playing that on there, and it's got a Christmas feel to it, especially the snow level, of course, the snow levels give it that feeling. And Christmas gaming, like I say, I always set time aside for gaming at Christmas, retro gaming and any type of gaming, to try and remind myself of Christmas has gone by. But not just that, try and give myself playing new games and that around that time of year, to try and remind me in the future about what Christmas was like now, you know, 2011 just gone by. It's the same with music as well, that whole Christmas gaming, the run up to Christmas, music plays a very integral part there as well of my nostalgic values. I say it's magical. You can't recapture, for me, that feeling at Christmas more with gaming anywhere else at the time of anywhere else in the year. Summer's got its own kind of feeling, of course, but summer's just a bit nothingy now. It's warm, it's sunny, lovely, jubbly, brilliant, but doesn't have Christmas around it. And finally, just before I do the off, just a little thing about how I found Retro Asylum. I found Retro Asylum back in the 1HMPS days. I found them because I was going through a particularly tough time, personal time. I just wanted to listen to people talking about gaming and so forth. I think a rough Google search or a search on iTunes for gaming podcast brought me up to 1HMPS, and the rest, as they say, cliched, is history. So that just leaves me to say thank you very much to Andy, the Retro Asylum crew, for letting me on this podcast. Hope it's not one-off. Hope I can do it again soon. It's taken me a long, long time to get on it. And I hope you enjoy this little section. I'm out of here now. This is Matt Dinara, signing off. See you later.
Talk about multiplaying. Now, before online gaming, multiplayer was basically you'd go around to a friend's house, they'd have a computer, you'd have a joystick or a control pad each, and you'd sit there in front of the same TV and play the same game. Now, what was your best experience in multiplaying and why?
Which
Mario Kart?
First Mario Kart, because on the Super Nintendo,
right.
I used to have friends come around and we say, right, so we have a game of battle mode. And if one of us gets killed and gets knocked off, and then we swap each other and have different turns and see which one's the best at battle mode. This was before the N64 when they had four controller ports.
Yeah.
So you only have two players at a time. But I think Mario Kart, before games online started to come out, it was a fantastic game on the Super Nintendo.
See, I'm not a big fan of that game. Maybe it's because I never played it multiplayer. You know, that's probably where I've gone wrong, actually. I've only ever played it single player. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying that multiplayer in Mario Kart is actually where it's at. So what other games did you have, like, good multiplayer experience with?
Bubble Bobble. Always come around to my house. And if you want to, you know, play Bubble Bobble, you could have two dragons on the same screen at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that, for two player, is absolutely fantastic. It's a big shame on Xbox Live, there's no online mode. Why?
Yeah. I think it was a lot easier when you were younger, Glenn, because, you know, you could go around to a friend's house. You didn't have to work. You know, all you had was school and stuff. It's like nowadays, I find it hard for my friends to come around and see me or me to go and visit them. So sometimes, if I can play online, I enjoy it, but it's not very often because real life does catch up. Let me think of my personal multiplayer experience. My first one comes to mind, Glenn, was Double Dragon on the ZX Spectrum. Now, although it wasn't a great game, Glenn, I was a huge fan of the arcade game, so I looked at that game with rose-tinted glasses. I mean, to me, at the time, I loved it. I couldn't see what was wrong with it. And my friend would come around every morning and we'd try and finish it until the end. We finally did finish it. So we spent hours trying to finish that game. Another one was a good few years later was Micro Machines on the Sega Mega Drive.
Oh, that was fantastic. And I think even on the games cartridge, it was two extra ports to put more pads in.
That's it. So we would play that four players, and I tell you what, we had some amazing battles on that. I mean, literally, I must have been about 16 at that time. I'd go around to a friend's house and would stay up the whole night just playing Micro Machines 2. I'm trying to think of another example. Street Fighter 2 was another game I got some amazing multiplayer on the Super Nintendo. My mate Dan, he'd come round to my house, and literally, Glenn, we'll do the first one to 100 would be the winner. Would play that game. First one to reach 100 wins would be, you know, the champion, and we'd have some epic battles.
I got another one for you, Barbarians.
Fantastic. I loved that. Who did you play with at Barbarian? Was it your brother? Or was it your friends?
Oh, my brother and my friends. But okay. I always used to have to try and chop the heads off.
Yeah.
Like the goblin just walk along and kick the head, because you could be losing badly on that Barbarians. You could have one dot left.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And they probably have the whole 9-10 dots, whatever they have on the screen. And if you could just chop the head off, and that's it, you're the winner.
It was so rewarding, Glenn, though, wasn't it? It's like you said, there could be you just about to die, and then all of a sudden you just swing around, chop off the head, and the look on your opponent's face, they'd be like, oh my God, that was such a cheap move, but It was brutal to watch. It was amazing.
Because you can't do that on Street Fighter 2. You can't do that on Mortal Kombat. You don't have anything like that, as far as I know, that you could win like that.
You're right. There isn't, actually. Not even in a game like Soul Calibur. I think all those games should actually have one move will kill if it connects properly. It could really be implemented really well. Okay, I've got another one for you. Way of the Exploding Fist was another game that I used to play non-stop. I used to play that so much. At the time, I only had the Speccy version, and my cousin had the C64 version, and he used to play it religiously, and so did I, and would have some epic battles on that one.
Oh, I used to like Lotus 1, 2, and 3. Had a multiplayer game where you race against each other. See, it was mainly racing games I actually liked a multiplayer. Because I think you do need a certain amount of skill and a way of judging the road and dodging things on the platform, on the road. And it was mainly car games I did like, the multiplayers. See, Micro Machines, what you mentioned before, that was a classic.
Now, you mentioned Mario Kart. Now, I really got into Mario 64. The N64 was one of the first consoles it's the second console that I bought for myself, actually. Actually, the third one, I think. Because I got myself the Super Nintendo, Mega Drive, then I got myself the N64, that's right. And I got Mario 64, and all my friends, we were, I think, first year of college, and all my friends would come round, and this was during our stoner days, Glenn. So we'd sit around, get stoned, and we'd play tournaments, four players of Mario 64. And I tell you what, I remember just... It was about 2 o'clock in the morning, just off my face, playing Rainbow Road. And, oh my God, that was just, I didn't know what the hell I was doing half the time. But it was so much fun. It was fun having people there. And I don't know if you were the same, Glenn. Did you ever sort of like, if you were winning, say, in a game of Mario Kart, you'd tease your friend next to you, you'd make fun of them.
Yes.
Because they're right there next to you.
Yes, I did. Especially when I was at first person, go, yeah, get in there.
The other thing I would do as well, especially with the N64 control pads, were that if you're losing in a game like Mario Kart, if you wrapped your foot around their cord, you could just yank it. And because it would slip out the control pad out of the socket, they couldn't play and you could win. So that was my little cheat thing as well.
Yeah, but that's cheating. Yeah. But I know this is not a retro game, but me and my girlfriend have that competitiveness. We play a game called Peggle.
I love that. Love
have
it
you played
on the
that?
Xbox. It, Got it on the Xbox.
It's a modern game, but me and my girlfriend always like playing Peggle. And I always like it when I win. But there's times when she wins, I'm like, But when I win, I turn around and go, Jacqueline, I'm the winner. she goes, She does like playing games, Jacqueline. That's a godsend to me.
Yeah, I think what we need to do at some point, we'll have another little meet-up at some point. And hopefully when I get my new house, I can have some of you guys come over. And then we can actually put a little bit of time into gaming. We'll sit down with some old consoles and give them a go. Looking back at these games, the retro ones, are they as good as you remember them? Or is nostalgia just makes them better than we actually thought they are?
Do you know, that is a really good question, Andy. And my answer to that is, when I play some games again, I'm like, God, I remember it being a bit better than this. But I suppose back then, your expectations were lower than today. Mm. Your expectations for games today are a lot higher than it was then.
Okay, Glenn, give us two examples of games that still play and look amazing, and give us two examples of two games that you've played recently and you thought, oh, God, did I really play that?
I like this.
All right, so start off with the good ones first, then. So two games that you actually really, you've played and you still think, wow, yeah, it's just as good as the day I remember it.
Rainbow Island.
Really?
That
okay.
Brilliant game on the Commodore 64. And I remember playing it again, because I actually bought the tape. I actually bought everything and played it again. And I think, yeah, it's just as good as I remember it. It's got the gameplay. It's got, you know, all the multi-level, all the levels in the game. It's got the, all the baddies and the baddies and all that. And I play it and think, yeah, it's really good. I can see why I liked this game.
Because I think a lot of the earlier games, Glenn, they were all about playability. It didn't really have to have great graphics because it made up for it in playability. Okay, give us another example of another game then, Glenn, that you really liked back then, which you still like now.
Well, the same, Bubble Bobble. I really liked Bubble Bobble on the Commodore 64, and I played it again. I think, yeah, that's a good game. That's a good gameplay game.
And again, Glenn, it's the same concept, isn't it? Simple graphics, simple gameplay, but addictive gameplay. Now, give us an example of two games that haven't aged as well that you've tried and you thought, oh, God, I can't believe I used to like this.
I have to say Resident Evil. When I played Resident Evil again, I actually got the Saturn version. I bought the Saturn version. And I played it again and I thought, hang on a minute. You know, I thought at the time the graphics were really good. But when I look at this, it seems really blocked. And you can tell that the background's all pre-rendered.
Yeah.
And could tell that, I think, hang on a minute, this doesn't look as good as I remember it.
Give us another game that you liked back then, which you don't like now. And we'll see if it connects to what I'm thinking.
That Hard Driven.
Right, okay.
Have you ever played that? I think it was made by Atari. It was late 80s. And that had, like, polygon 3D games, but that's aged really badly, that game. Played that, I think, God, did I used to love this? Because when I was at Primrose Valley, I could not stop put 50p's in that machine to play that game.
Because for me, at the time, I felt like I was actually driving a real car because the graphics were that stunning. But you look at them now, they're pretty basic, really.
Oh, it is.
And I think, yeah, that's my whole point, that when you look at certain games, you can look at a game like Super Mario Brothers, it's aged fantastically. You can look at a game like Ghouls and Ghosts, it's aged fantastically. Sure, it's tough, but it still plays just as good. But the more modern games on a 32-bit look that little bit uglier, which I think ruin it a little bit. Like for me, I used to love Resident Evil, Glenn. I completely agree with you. You're saying that you loved it as well. But I've tried playing it, and I hate the control, I hate the look of the game. It just looks very blocky. It just...
Well, I can't say I hate the game.
Oh, I don't hate it.
It's like a game you played you liked, but you hate it now. And I think, well, yeah, Resident Evil looks really outdated, but I don't hate the game. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd find it hard to get into it again. I couldn't sit there and play it through again. I don't think I could.
Although, if you played the GameCube version, the GameCube version looks absolutely fantastic.
I agree with you there. I have never played that version. If I were to play Resident Evil again, I would do that version, Glenn. To the game that I used to love back then, which I still love playing now. Again, I was going to say Bubble Bobble, but Glenn's nicked that idea off me. So I'm going to say Bomberman. Bomberman was a game that I basically found really addictive back then, especially multiplayer. And it's a game that's just really easy to pick up and play. And I can still do that from time to time. And another game as well is Street Fighter 2. I can still go back to that game time after time. I think it's aged beautifully. Now, the game that I think hasn't aged as well is... Well, I was going to go for Resident Evil, but again, Glenn picked that. So I'm going to say maybe Virtual Fighter. I used to love that when it first came out. And like now, I look at it, it looks very horrible, actually. It's blocky.
Really blocky.
And basically, the whole segue, Glenn, which I was going to try and do is literally, if you think about it, a lot of the 2D games from the pre-16-bit era have aged fantastically. But it's 32-bit machines, games like you said, Resident Evil, they're not as good. You know, maybe the gameplay's still there, but visually they've aged the worst because it was so early in its technology. But why do we still play retro games now, Glenn? Why do you play retro games to this day still?
What I like about retro games is, like, they're very... I find them a lot easier to get into. A lot of modern games today, you have to learn all the controls. And this pad, like the Xbox 360 pad, it must have, like, 10 buttons altogether, if you include even the D-pad bits.
Yeah.
And you have to go through like 10 minutes of tutorials, and you have to get into the game for like 10, 15 minutes before you even know how to play the game properly. Such as a game like Space Invaders or Donkey Kong or like Bubble Bobble. You could get into a game in a matter of minutes and seconds.
That's right.
Because you only have like a joystick and one button or two buttons. Mm-hmm. And I think as time goes on, the console's got more and more buttons, the game's got more and more complicated, you need more and more time to get into the games. But if you want a quick little game or something, the older games are a lot easier to get hold of and get used to.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, for me personally, the reason why I play retro games now is because, for me, growing up, I was there from the beginning for when games first started coming out in the arcades, like Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong. And it was like a whole new world, you know. I was there when the whole games crash, I think, what was it, 84 happened. And I, you know, I saw all this new technology. I saw it going from the, you know, 8-bit computers to the 8-bit consoles to the 16-bit consoles, where they started looking like arcade games. I've got all this history. And there were so many games that I hadn't played or hadn't finished then. And like now, because of work, because of family, because of other commitments, I can't really invest 10 hours, 12 hours into a game, Glenn. I can't do that anymore. So like now, I fire up MAME. Sometimes I'll play an arcade game for about 5-10 minutes. That's me done. And I just find the gameplay so simple and easy to get into, which is the reason why I play it.
The games were easy. But
no.
They had that nice balance of the games not being too easy, but the game's not impossible to get used to.
Well, some games were a pain in the ass. Some games you couldn't get used to, yeah. But, all right, the other thing I want to ask you, Glenn, then, is, so why do you do this retro gaming podcast? I mean, literally, we don't get paid to do this. Why do you do this? You know, why do you make videos on YouTube? Why do you do videos for the site?
Well, the reason why I do it, because I'm really into the old games, because it does bring me back to my youth playing old games. But I'm really happy that there are other people out there on the internet, out there in the world, that I think along the same lines as me, that do love to play the games when they were like little, and they remember the good games, and they're like, it's like a community. People come together and talk about their experiences and what the games are like, and the reason why I do this podcast, because I really enjoy talking about it, and I really enjoy talking to you and Swainy and Malk and, you know, and Tony. I really enjoy talking to everybody about our experiences.
You know what, Glenn, I think you hit the nail on the head perfectly then. I completely agree. You covered a lot of what I was going to say there. But literally, again, I've got to say, for me, I'm a bit of a geek, and I'm a big kid as well, really. You know, I love all these things, and all these games are so available to us, and I love talking about these things. But a lot of my work colleagues, they're not into retro gaming. And when I first got on the internet, I discovered websites, I discovered sort of like YouTube, but there's so many weirdos, so many clicks, and you know, some people are very, oh, you like this, but you can't like that. So that's what made me think, you know what, I'll start my own website. And it's been trial and error, you know, I've done a few different websites, but this is the one where I think it's worked the best, because we've got a great community. You know, everyone's absolutely fantastic, everyone's really nice, everyone's really polite. Everyone knows how to, sometimes we don't agree with the other person's comment, but we're all adult about it. And that's what's nice. You can have a disagreement and be constructive at the same time.
Like some people say, oh, you don't like this, I hate you. Like I didn't like Sonic Racers, Sonic R. And I mentioned why I didn't like it. I mentioned I didn't like the controls, and somebody put back saying, how dare you, how dare you say this about my game, you don't know how to play this, you don't know how to do this and do that.
You know, exactly,
this is my point of view. I did not like it. I might like a game that you don't like, and you say, oh, I love this game so much, and I go, well, it's you, isn't it, you like this game, but I don't like that game. But I'm not going to say, how dare you, you know.
It's true. It'll be like me, Glenn, saying, "How dare you? How dare you like the Commodore 64 version of Quick Snacks? How dare you?" But no, I mean, I agree. I started getting a little bit, I don't know, disheartened with YouTube because there's so many people that, I don't know, I don't think can be adult about things. You know, they get too involved in it. And it shouldn't have to be like that. So I wanted to build my own safeguard community where everyone can do nice things, talk about games. And the podcast as well. Sometimes I want to talk about gaming, retro gaming, and it's the perfect opportunity for me to get my output and talk about these memories. And it's a release for me, Glenn, because I feel so good that I've done that. You know, for a whole week, I'm like, yeah, I talked about that. You know, I feel rather good for that.
Well, it's like me somehow making my games. Some people say, oh, I don't like this, I don't like that.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, you haven't paid for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I could do what I want.
That's it. you could make a sequel to Quick Snacks on the Commodore 64 if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. You see, I'm getting on very well with that game now. You don't collect diamonds anymore. Now you pick up objects and you do different things with objects.
Really? Wow. Okay.
So that's a new thing with that game. And, well, it's still a work in progress.
All right. I'll tell you what, Glenn. Let's start wrapping this podcast up. So basically, guys, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, you can find us at retroasylum.com. That is our site. And that's where we've got loads of gaming reviews from loads of different people. And we try and upload new things there every couple of days. We've got a fantastic forum with amazing members. We've got our YouTube, which is retroasylum.com. We've got my YouTube channel, which is Locomaniacs1HMPS. You've got Glenn's, which is Glenn83100.
Hmm?
You've got Swaney's, which is Swaney101's. And there's loads of other, you know, people there that have got their own channels, which you should definitely check out. Any other thank yous or goodbyes you'd like to say to Glenn?
Well, I like to say thank you to everybody who listens, and thank you for your support, everybody.
Definitely. I think we try to do something different this time, guys. And I think that's what I'm going to try and do every so often, make the podcast a little bit different. So that way you guys don't get bored of the same tired format. But I honestly want to say thank you so much, because you guys actually, by commenting, by encouraging us to do this, it gives us more inspiration to keep on producing these shows. So thank you very much for all your help and contributions, guys. And sites you should check out: Nesbitt.com, which is run by Love Farius. If you're a fan of the 8-bit NES, definitely check that out. Another site you should check out is Yolkfort.com, which is all about Dizzy. So if you love Dizzy the Egg, check out Yolkfort.com. And I think that's me pretty much rounded everything up, Glenn. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. And take care, everybody.
Right, so I think that went pretty well, Glenn. We got some good topics of conversation.
Yeah, that was good. I tell you that question did trip me up. That one about a game that I loved. then, but today I hate it. And I'm like, do you know, I can't think of one that I really detest and hate, but I like it back then. I could tell me, a game that I hated.
For me, it would be Double Dragon. I used to love so much back then on the ZX Spectrum. I used to love it and play it to death. And then playing it recently, I'm thinking, I can't believe I used to play this piece of crap.
Just say, I didn't like Rise of the Robots, but I hated it then.
Yeah.
So I can't put that in it, you know. And I didn't like Pit Fighter, but I hated it then. So I think, God, I can't think of one.
Since I've met my wife, I think I've moved about 6 times. Oh, I don't know why. And before I met my wife... Give us another game that you liked back then, which you don't like now. And we'll see if it connects to what I'm thinking.
a game that I did like back then, but today I won't play it now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh. Just give me a moment to think of this one and edit this one out. That boggled my mind, that one. Ugh. See, I did like that game. That wasn't bad. I'm not really...
You can think of something. Go on.
I probably have to say a game I really did like was... good. It was good graphics. It was good graphics, but
what game
was...
though? You can't think of one, can you?
I can't think. It's thinking of a game that I liked, but played it again. I don't like it.
All right.
And
well,
that's boggled my mind, because I think I somehow do expect to have the games look not as good as today's games.